Hi, BBs. Welcome to another edition of the Burn Black Audio Zine, your place for mental health, astrology, wellness, and self-help. How's your week going? Mine is going okay. It's been really busy work-wise. I am swamped. Thank you, guys. I'm trying to take a little bit of time for myself, but I have been pretty busy creating content and doing readings for you guys. Thank you so much for your feedback and all of your notes. I appreciate everybody, and I read everything and try to respond to it as fast as I can. This weekend I went to the Leather Archives here in Chicago. They had a little pop-up fetish market for the holidays, and it was really nice. It's in my neighborhood. I love Rogers Park and the Andersonville neighborhoods in Chicago. There's just like a real charm to them that's unlike anywhere else in the city. I love it over here, but it's a very queer community for anyone who does not know. And the Leather Archives is a museum. It's a LGBT queer culture leather museum. And they had a fetish market, and it was awesome. And I got to go, and I haven't been in a few weeks, and I got to see some new art exhibits that I hadn't seen before. The last time I was there, they had a glass dildo collection. It was fabulous. This week, got to go, and there was a bear of a Santa taking pictures for local charities. Early to Bed, which is a local sex shop. It's a feminist sex shop here in Andersonville. They were tabling, and they had a lot of really cool stuff. I got to meet some local vendors. It was really nice. I then went to, they have like a library, and you could just sit there with all the books there from, you know, 1940s, 1950s, these little dime store romance novels that are just so, so erotic. And they have everything from the 1940s until current day. There's zines there as well. Anything that you would want to see on erotic art, on queer lifestyles, it's quite amazing. It's overwhelming being there. And I just got this like pretty sad feeling being there, because I was looking at all these personal ads of these men in the 1960s, and all they really wanted to do was connect with someone. That's all they wanted, and there's like a desperation in it, and a sadness, and a loneliness, and it's like I understood that feeling very strongly, and I started thinking about what that must have been like to live in those times where, I mean, it's scary enough for all of us now, and it's almost 2020, right? And we're still having to deal with these issues, but back then, I really felt the presence of so many people before me who are queer and, you know, just have either denied parts of themselves and felt loneliness and just wanting so badly to connect and not knowing, you know, not even knowing that about in yourself or being able to share it in any sort of way. It was just very overwhelming, and I just felt that a lot in my heart at that moment. And it made me sad, and I started to think about how over the summer I had an opportunity to meet my sister, who's 23 years older than me. And so we both experienced my dad, or our dad, in completely different ways. And she had the 1960s version of him, and I had this 90s version of him. And there were things about my father that, you know, were horrible, but the best thing that he did ever was try to start fixing some of those issues towards the end of his life. And I learned how to be a good person from my father, because it's not as simple as my brother would say, I know what not to do. I think that that oftentimes, generationally, in my opinion, in my experience, when I see kids doing the opposite of the parent, you end up running into the same extreme on the other side. I got to see it from both sides. Call back to last week with Rachel Jordan when we discussed the song Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell. But I got to see both sides of it, and so it's just much more complex than that. And my dad taught me how to be a good person in a lot of ways. He was a very generous person. He cared a lot about people with disabilities, and he visited people who were veterans, and that was very important to him. But in other ways, he could be quite cruel and heartless, and that's just the dichotomy of what he was. And I just try to take the good, you know, and learn from the bad. But I think what I was really feeling this moment was we couldn't understand a lot of the hatred in my father's heart, and we both kind of realized that, and we both had these thoughts separately, but we're just like, Dad was queer. He had to have been queer in some way, and he never even realized it, right? And he had to have lived with this his whole life, and it made him a very angry person and a very hateful person. And I just had this moment while I was sitting there in the library where it was just like I let one go for my dad, and I just acknowledged him and sent him love to wherever he is on the consciousness level. I sent love to people who passed, who took their lives from feeling so isolated and disconnected and not aware of these parts of themselves, not feeling safe enough to express it. And I just felt it all in that moment in my heart. And then I came home and I ate an apple fritter, and I realized I hadn't had an apple fritter since I was 12 years old. And that was because, you know, my dad started trying, and we would go to Dunkin' Donuts every morning before school, and he would get an apple fritter and he would share it with me. And I realized I just didn't even realize when I was ordering this at the donut shop that that's what it was. I was just like so on autopilot, so in trauma mode. And I ate this apple fritter in my bed that night, and as I was eating it, I acknowledged, damn, this is fucking good. You know, I never think of Dunkin' Donuts as being that great of a donut, but I hadn't had one since I was 12, and I ate it for my dad, and I ate it for all of you, and I ate it for the cycle of life. So that was my week. This week on the podcast, I'm so excited for this conversation. Hopefully it is one of many to come. This is Maggie Flood. They are an acupuncturist and pelvic floor healer from Southern California. We had an amazing chat. We talked a lot about consent-based care, which is really interesting. We talk about pelvic health, what's normal, what's not so normal, what you should go to the doctor for, and she gives some advice on how to get the most out of your medical visit if you're low income and you just don't get to choose who you get to see, like so many of us don't have that luxury unless we live in Canada. But anyway, I really loved this chat, and I hope to have Maggie back soon, and I hope to collaborate with her soon because she was so lovely. So, without further ado, Here's this week's episode. Love you.
Okay, look. I made a solemn promise to myself that I would not go all the way until I was ready. And I'm, like, sticking to that.
I'm just vaguely curious. I saw you making out with Kyle.
Are you?
I'm good.
So I wanted to start with the word embodiment. What does embodiment mean to you?
So to me, embodiment means being present with the body and all of its physical sensations. That's really how it starts. So when I use this piece in my practice, I mean, when I do the pelvic work, it's really a matter of putting somebody in an embodied space, putting them in their body, allowing them to feel what the body is feeling, and then connecting that body sensation with the mind. We can use different channels of orientation towards, you know, like what's present, you know, what's happening right now, and can I, how does my mind interpret that? So staying present to the body is a really beautiful experience, and it's not something that we usually get when it comes to being touched or, you know, talking about what's happening with our bodies. So that's what embodiment means to me. I hope that makes sense.
It does. Can you talk a little bit for someone who's just a beginner, and just understanding their own body? Like, what are some of the ways in which we can be, I guess, disembodied from our physical being? Like, are we disassociate from our being?
Some of the ways, well, it usually really kind of depends on, you know, what your history is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people, well, if we're talking specifically about the genitals and the pelvic floor, I mean, a lot of us, most of us are raised in situations in a society, actually, which doesn't really value the fact that sexual energy and sexual aliveness are necessary for a happy existence. So most of us kind of come from a place of already having shame. And so if we're putting shame down in the pelvic floor and we're storing it there, then we're just going to be kind of associating and we're not going to want to be present to it. So it makes it over time very hard to be present to, you know, the genitals, to sex, and we end up kind of checking out.
Yeah.
We check out when we're having sex, we check out when we're having a pelvic exam. We check out when it comes to even talking about our sexual organs. So for a lot of us, at least in the work that I do, when it comes to the pelvic floor, it's really a matter of getting us back in touch with this one very specific place in order to feel the whole body, right? Yeah. So that kind of dissociation can look like a lot of things, and it presents differently in so many people. So some people, they can't feel anything. And they come to me because they feel numb and they're just, they have no libido, or they're just, you know, not interested. Some people are hypersexual, and that's in some ways a dissociation, because when we're hypersexual, sometimes we're not actually in our bodies, but we're trying to fulfill something, you know, by having sexual experience or trying really hard to get back in touch. And then sometimes it looks like pain. Sometimes it presents in a way that's like, you know, uterine pain. I honestly think endometriosis is a very big one because that's my experience.
Same.
Yeah. It causes... Sorry, go ahead.
No, continue.
It causes a lot of dissociation over time too, when we Definitely. Have pain. So it can start as pain, you know, like we could say, you know, subconsciously, I don't want to be part of this experience in my body. And then the body starts to scream. And then once there's pain, because the body's saying, please pay attention to me, then we dissociate further from that because we're like, okay, well, I don't want to feel this. So I'm going to medications to cut it off. I'm going to, you know, like do anything I can just to not feel it even more. So it kind of depends on the person. Everyone has some form of it, even if it's just checking out during sexual experience. Yeah, it's a really interesting one.
So I have endometriosis. You're working on this new workshop. So I wanted to ask you, I find in most of my endometriosis groups that I belong to online, the hardest thing is the diagnosis. And I think that so many people are so scared of going to the doctor. They don't have insurance to cover going to a doctor, let alone a specialist to get tested for something so specific as endometriosis. And we both know that if, like, you even go through that process, that's not just one doctor's visit. That's many visits and could be many doctors because it is so difficult. Mm-hmm. So it seems very overwhelming to even begin that journey. So let's maybe walk someone through some of those beginning steps to have a conversation with their doctor in which they are using the most of the, or they're getting the most out of their time. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can talk a little bit about what does a first visit look like? What questions you should be asking? What's abnormal? What are common things that come up in your own practice that you feel are important to share with someone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This topic came up for me recently, personally, actually, because I went to the doctor. I have an ear condition, which is caused by a broken bone in my ear. And so this is even a little bit different. But I went to the doctor who basically called me crazy on Monday.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
No, you know what the thing is, though? Like, I was expecting it. You know, I expect these things because I've gone through the whole system and had endo. And, you know, when it comes to women's pain, we are even more... you know, pushed aside and called hysterical or whatever. And, you know, for me, I had this one extra experience on Monday where I expected it. I walked in, I said, look, these are the medications that I know is helping me with my ear. I would like PT. I know that my neck muscles are tight. These are things that I need. And was basically already kind of eye-rolled for being prepared. And so the thing is to expect... to be eye rolled.
But you're doing your job as a patient. Let me just say that if anyone is listening, this is your job as a patient, and the doctor was mad at you for doing that.
Right.
That is the problem with the culture of visiting doctors, unfortunately. So I just want to point that out.
Right. Well, and you know, the thing is that with, you know, WebMD culture, we're in Google culture, there are a lot of things out there that people get really bring them to the doctor and the doctor's like, that's ridiculous and you shouldn't be looking at Google, as you know. But the thing is that there are a lot of things that doctors also don't know. A general MD does not have a huge expanded knowledge of everything that could possibly be wrong with you. So it really is, even if it's annoying to the doctor, it's a really great thing to be prepared and just say, look, I know that this thing can be causing my pain or my suffering. And can you look into these things? And a good doctor will say, you know, like, let's send you to a specialist or let's see what we can do. But I came back from that experience and I was like, it kind of reminded me, like, there's a lot of people. The day before, I had posted about IUDs and how IUDs should not be hurting us.
Yeah, and that's something that often comes up. I hear that really often, actually.
Really often, and it's crazy because if you Google it, you know, should my IUD hurt? The first thing that pops up is, no, IUDs do not hurt. And then, of course, you think you're crazy.
Yeah.
But the thing is that an IUD is a foreign object that you're putting into your uterus, and your uterus is going to try to, you know, deal with that and or expel it. A healthy body will try really hard to expel a foreign object.
Yeah.
So the thing is that there is a lot of pain associated with IUDs. There are a lot of complications there that are just not discussed. And I had a lot of people comment and message me about how, you know, they had this terrible experience. They think their body is ruined. And, you know, on top of that, a lot of doctors are saying, you're crazy if you think an IUD is going to hurt you. And they're made to think that it's all in their head, that they're nuts for feeling this. And so, you know, there are a lot of experiences where people have these IUDs and or this could be happening with endometriosis or anything else.
Yeah.
And they're sitting with these symptoms thinking that they're the one that's crazy. And it's not.
And it's, also, things don't work for everybody. I mean, there can be things that are 98.9% of the time they work for people. And then there could be the one person where you have like a really bad reaction to this thing. Why are you not listening to that person? Why is that person not as valid as the 98%? This comes up also too because of, you know, the Gardasil stuff.
Ugh, gross.
And and okay, for anyone who's listening, this was a shot that you could get that they were promoting that would help you get rid of the – or I'm sorry, not get rid of, but get the HPV virus. And there were a lot of girls who got this shot and, you know, nothing happened. It was great, right? But then there were a lot of people who got very, very, very sick from mm-hmm. – and it actually caused a ton of issues. One of my friends had a lot of nervous system issues as a result mm-hmm. of the shot, and that she had it 8 years ago, and it is still affecting her today. So, I mean, your opinion or your body or whatever you feel like you need to tell your doctor, you should never be afraid to do that, and you should never have someone not take you seriously, even if you're in that 1%.
Right. But then there's also, so we can use our words, but then there's also this other piece that we're missing when it comes to standing up for ourselves with doctors. And this is why I was like, I'm going to do a free webinar, because I feel like this is information that people need, because they're messaging me and saying, well, I do say this to my doctor and I do try to stand my ground. And then they insist on giving me an exam when I didn't say I wanted that. And when it comes to touch, mm-hmm. when it comes to being examined, that's the moment when a lot of us freeze. We go into a freeze state.
Because we're trusting like, the doctor knows best, but we're...
But our bodies don't want it. Yeah. Or our bodies need a moment to internalize the fact that we're about to be touched, especially a traumatized body.
Yeah.
So when you have a situation where someone's, you know, they have all the boundaries in their mind, but they don't have the boundary in their body, then you end up allowing a situation to potentially cause you trauma. So there are a lot of people who say, I see people, I get people to come to me after, you know, they feel like they've been traumatized from a pelvic PT exam or from a gynecological exam. I've seen lots of people come in saying, I don't want to be touched anymore. I have no more sexual function after I had you know, like this botched gynecological exam. And it's really, I mean, it's an experience inside the body that, like, if you internalize that as trauma, and that's something that you didn't give consent towards in your body, then there's going to be issues there. That's going to become a long-term issue. And so this is why I was like, okay, we need to kind of talk about, you know, we can make boundaries from our words, and that's fine, but we need to learn how to make boundaries from our body. And I was giving a workshop called Intro to the Body Boundary, and I realized that what is really needed is more of like a discussion around medical, you know, like because we can put those consent words towards lovers and be a little bit more okay with it than we can with medical doctors. Because with medical doctors, it's kind of like, well, I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Exactly. You know? You're putting a lot of trust into someone. And if they're not looking at what your physical or verbal boundaries are, again, it puts you in that freeze state where you're just you don't know what to do and have a traumatic experience. So, like, what can we do? what are some things that you teach in your workshop that you feel like are very useful as far as creating physical and verbal boundaries with your mm-hmm. medical care practitioner?
Well, so because a lot of us with vulvas and vaginas, we are, you know, we're raised in a society that tells us that we are not to make any commands towards anyone about how to treat us. This mm-hmm. is a very subtle thing, right?
That we
live in a very a society that demands that women be, or, you know, people with vaginas be, you know, subservient. Mm-hmm. And this is, it's a subtle one. That's a subtle expectation. And it comes through in medical. So I think to prepare the work, good to walk in, you know, being prepared to have a statement of, I think it could be this, this, or this. What would you recommend? And know what the recommendation treatment is. You know, like, say if you expect that you might have pelvic floor dysfunction, you could come to your doctor and say, I would like to see a pelvic floor PT. I know that my insurance covers this. You know, do your research, but then also expect that your body might have its own boundaries. And so from there, this is where I teach how to stay present to the body. So this is where we come back to embodiment and embodiment tools. And I think one of the better things that we can learn to do is learn to take a moment of mindfulness and breathe and tell your doctor. I tell women this all the time because, you know, I'm like, you know, if you really need a moment before someone touches your vulva and tells you they're going to put their hand inside your vagina, you need to say to that person, I am a traumatized body. I would like X amount of time before you touch me. I would like eye contact. I would like you to breathe with me. And if they laugh at you, which they very well might because they're on a rush schedule, you can just say, then I don't want to do this and I'm not paying for this visit. Like, you know, yeah. You need to understand that. And if you have to tell them, I have a very traumatic, abusive history with my vulva. If you need to tell them that to get them to pay attention to you, even if it's a lie, I tell people all the time, like, just say it. If that's what they need to hear for you to have consent coming from your body, then say it, you know, like,
absolutely.
Stand your ground somehow, because people don't always speak the same language. And I think that we forget, you know, the thing is, like, even if you go to a gynecological exam and you're like, I'm just going to turn my head to the right and try not to tense up and just wait till it's over with, which, you know, that's most of us. Your body still is, you can feel your muscles clamping up.
Totally. Because
the vagina does not just open for people. It's actually made to be aroused, and that's how it's supposed to open.
They say, you know, it takes about 30 minutes for a vagina to know that it wants to be touched.
Pretty much. Yes, yeah. Exactly. So if you can have your doctor with a gloved hand put their hand over your pubic bone and then, you know, say, okay, are you ready for me to touch you? You can close your eyes and say, and do some breath work and say, you know, a little bit inhale, exhale. Okay. Tell your body you're about to be penetrated. Please remain open. It's okay. If you talk to your body, your body will have a better response to that. And, you Absolutely. Know, it's not necessarily going to be pleasant. But
I was going to say, like, I have autism, so I have a lot of sensory issues.
Oh,
and I know a lot of our listeners who are also on the spectrum and have sensory-based issues, like, it's come up with them that, again, they need to always articulate that before an exam that, like, I need you to maybe touch a different part of my body, perhaps my stomach, and mm-hmm. apply pressure so my body is ready to be touched in the other space that's closely connected to it. Like, sometimes they will have to request, I need you to touch my leg for a few minutes first and apply mm-hmm. pressure, because we just experience sensations differently. And it can be quite traumatic to our senses and cause a lot of hypervigilance, and
absolutely
that can last in loop in our brains for days.
That's trauma.
Yeah,
that's trauma. I mean, and it the thing is, it's little t trauma, but really, how do you like quantify how much trauma your body's experiencing? And I think that you know, if we take a moment to be present to our experience and to not judge the body for doing exactly what it's made to do, which is to, you know, clam up and not want to allow, it's protecting you, and it's loving you, and giving you pain is protection and love as well. And I honestly think that we forget, you know, there again is that dissociative quality. It's pain. I don't want pain. So X, Y, Z, like I'm going to cover pain and, you know, not be present with it. And you'd be surprised if you're present with every experience that your body is going through. If you're present with your body, you can actually, you know, move through these experiences with a lot less trauma, a lot less, you know, trauma collected in the tissues of the pelvic floor. I mean, I think these things are important, even if they're little.
You know, there was a girl in our school. She had premarital sex. You know what she did on graduation day? Died of an overdose, heroin.
Dad, are any of your friends alive?
Okay, so can we talk a little bit about things that are abnormal that you would definitely want to go see a doctor about, and how to maybe start having that conversation with a doctor if you, you know, don't have a lot of money or health insurance, like how to make the most out of your visit?
Okay, so if you're going to take a look at your body and what's normal, not normal, some of the things that are not normal are, you know, going through many tampons or cups throughout, you know, cup fills throughout a day of your period. If it's very, very heavy, that's not normal. That's called flooding, and it's not normal. And then having pain during sex is typically not normal. A lot of people think that it is, so just a pro tip, if you're having a lot of pain with sex, then there could be a few different reasons. Things with endometriosis specifically, I think if you're having a lot of pain throughout your day, the excessive bloating is a little bit of a sign. Anything that, you know, is causing you a daily issue with your uterine health and or digestive health really should be seen by a doctor and perhaps referred to a specialist. So if you do end up going to a doctor who, you know, if you don't have the greatest insurance and maybe your doctor visit is rushed, you can always be very prepared with your research. Know that you deserve the time to talk to somebody. If you're feeling rushed throughout your visit, you can ask, is there, you know, somebody else I can continue to have this conversation with? Would you consider referring me to a specialist? And, you know, just make sure that the conversation can continue if you know something is wrong. A lot of times I hear people say that they end up going into gynecologist appointments with men, you know, male gynecologists, and don't feel like they get heard. That's something that, you know, if I always tell people, you can, you know, mix your words up a little bit and say, you know, I understand that you're like this really great doctor, and like kind of stroke an ego, you know, because you can get a little bit more time out of somebody if you tell them that you're respecting their time. I think too, a lot of the times we go in expecting to be talked down to, and, you know, people get defensive and people have their own patterns of talking and relating. So just making sure that you understand that they have time that needs to be respected, but then also that they need to respect your time. You know, kind of create a little bit of a list for yourself of things that you will and will not tolerate in terms of conversation, and just stand your ground. And then also tap into your body and know that. And that's a little bit more of a precursor to going to the doctor, which is what, you know, I tell my patients all the time. Just make sure you know what you feel. And that's with the meditation, obviously.
Yeah. Carissa, who does a zine distro called Wasted Ink Zine Distro in Arizona, it has endometriosis, is a friend of mine. And they actually made a zine that has body maps on them that you can take to your doctor so that your doctor will actually take you seriously when you're coming to them and saying that I have pelvic pain and this is specifically where I feel it. This is how long I've been feeling it. These are the patterns of behavior to my menstrual cycle. Also, something I think is really cool is there is a sex shop in Chicago in the Andersonville neighborhood, and they have these little cards that you can bring to your doctor, and it says, "Hi, my gender pronouns are this, and these are things that you should know about my specific body and how I want to be touched and whatnot, anything that they feel is important before going in." And I think that, you know, unfortunately, the medical industry has not really caught up with the times. So we have to learn how to sort of become our best advocates for our medical care. So I think, like, sometimes having tools like that, very DIY tools like that, really help you get the most out of your medical visits.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's amazing. That's, like, an incredibly awesome idea.
Yeah, I hope by spreading the word, more people catch on and do that. I did want to ask you one thing, and then I want to talk to you about, like, connecting to your body. But I did have one other question before that. And we just spoke to the things that are abnormal. And something that I find interesting as I get older is I'm learning more and more about how my body actually works that I was never taught when I was younger and should have been. We have period talks, I mean, kind of, if you had, like, a parent that gave you a good one, congratulations. just things like, okay, for instance, discharge, what's normal with discharge? And also, like, we don't realize that discharge can actually tell us a lot about our bodies and, like, that it changes throughout the month. So you can actually find out a lot about your fertility through the discharge that you have, and just even things like having bumps. Like, it is normal to have bumps. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have an STI. There's a lot of things that are, like, very normal that we kind of freak out about. And so I'm wondering if, like, there's things that come up in your practice that are, like, that people come to you and they think is actually a huge concern, which is, like, totally normal.
Yeah, so when it comes to discharge in particular, sometimes people don't realize that certain types of discharge are not an infection, but can be insinuating that you're actually fertile.
Yeah.
And I used to make that mistake a lot before I knew these things too. And I would go to the doctor and be like, I think I have BV. I'm having all this creamy discharge. And they're like, yeah, you don't have. But the funny thing is, like, I'd go to a gynecologist and they'd be like, huh, that's really weird. And they didn't really know that, you know, this certain cervical mucus can actually mean that you're fertile. You know, that was one thing. Some other things, I have seen a lot of people, believe it or not, who say, I squirt. I squirt during sex, and I think, like, is it me peeing? Congratulations. It abnormal? Some people, but a lot of people who do squirt, they actually have a lot of shame around it because it can get messy. And, you know, unless, it, you know, it's something that's fetishized to some degree in some circles. But if it's something that just happens to somebody who doesn't really know or understand what's going on, that can be something that's really off-putting about the body, right?
Yeah.
Which is totally normal. When your G-spot gets super aroused, you can have squirting, even with or without what feels like an orgasm. So that can happen. There's all kinds of things, actually, that people present with. Bumps, sometimes people think that certain bumps are, you know, STD related, but they're actually, like, razor burn, or can be, like, a little bit of a cuticle or an infection from, like, getting waxed or something. So, and that's not to say to discount everything that's happening to your body, but there are a lot of things that, you know, we're not taught about from the beginning that can be quite normal.
Okay. I feel like I've been learning so much about my own body. It's amazing. I feel like even that's, like, one way that we're disconnected from our bodies, is that we're just not educated about their our bodies.
Right.
So, like, this is why I find, like, body scans super important. I find, like, meditations that, like, are focused on connecting to your body super important. You do a lot of that in your practice. I'm wondering, for a beginner, for someone who's, like, never explore it, what does that look like for you in your practice, and how does it really help you bodies without a partner and just, like, alone in their room without anybody's doing?
Yeah, so well, what I teach from the get-go, really, because most people who come to see me aren't really connected to their bodies, and that's, believe it or not, quite normal. And I always normalize it, you know, because it can be shameful in and of itself to feel I am just disconnected from my body and I feel bad about that. Like, I should be more this or I should be more that. And the thing is that my message to everyone is you're not raised in a society that values that. You were not taught how to give, you know, your attention to your body and your physical sensations. So that's okay. And I think that the beginning of that practice, it does take some time to actually feel things sometimes. Some people are more connected than others. When we start a body scan practice, it really just generally looks like, what is it that you feel? And then from there, we add in touch and safe touch. How does this touch feel? Does this touch feel safe in your body? Where is safety in your body? And those things kind of start to, you know, compound on each other, and we work up from there. But if you're just going to start doing a body scan by yourself, like before a doctor's appointment, one of the best things to do is give yourself a moment to allow your body to move however it wants to move. Once you start tapping in, you know, you could start feeling from your left foot up your body, start just putting all of your attention in one part of your body and then another, and just kind of sit there with it, like a little bit of a mindfulness meditation, and see what your body has to say. And then, you know, you can add little things to that, like you can add movement to that and see what it is that your body needs in terms of movement. You can, listen to what, you know, is being said by your body. Like if there's any messages that pop up to you, you know, there are different ways to do it, but just giving yourself a few minutes each day to check in and just to let your body talk through physical sensation is one of the best ways to begin that practice.
That's awesome. So if somebody wanted to visit your website, could they find some meditations and things like that there?
I have a pelvic meditation that's free. I have that in my Instagram links. I also have it on my website. And I'm hoping to put more up there. I'm doing an endometriosis embodiment specific course in February where I will teach a lot of these things. We'll kind of start by adding different elements into these meditations. But that one on my website is just very basic, but it's getting back in touch with the pelvic floor, which is really awesome. So that's one that you could start with. And then, you know, adding on to that, just kind of listen. You know, if you do that once a day, you can kind of listen and feel into what your body is saying and maybe, you know, add some of your own elements to that. It can be a really beautiful practice.
That's awesome. All right. So I want to close this out. We had a question from the audience. I'm gonna leave this anonymous. They had asked, they seem to have trouble after giving birth urinating. They said that they don't feel like they get it all out unless they stand up. What do you think could be causing this? And is there any sort of exercises that they could be doing at home? And again, this is specific to someone who has just given birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that case is a little bit interesting. If the person's having trouble actually getting pee out, then it could be, because usually the issue is that they're urinating a lot. But if you're having trouble getting something out, then it could be pelvic floor tightness. It could also be scar tissue. So when you give birth, you can actually have an issue building scar tissue up into the pelvic floor. You know, like if you have a very traumatic birth, then scar tissue starts to heal. It helps you heal. But sometimes we don't heal quite correctly. And sometimes maybe one side is a little bit more tense and pulled than the other. And so I would suggest in that case, either seeking out a pelvic floor PT. And if the or a sexological body worker. If the pelvic floor PT is trauma-informed, say there was a real traumatic birth experience, like there was tearing, a doctor touched me without permission, and I just feel really weird about the whole thing, then I would suggest either a PT who's trauma-informed specifically or a sexological body worker. The sexological body worker will have more of an embodiment tilt to the practice. So like the way I work, if someone comes to see me, I'm asking them, like, is it okay if I put my hand here? What would it feel like if we started here on the vulva? You know, like there are different ways that we approach the body and talk to the person about their body experience. And it's kind of more client led. If you go to a pelvic floor PT, you might hear something like, my hand is going into your vagina right now. You know, like you will feel my hand, just more like, you know, more or less like a gynecological visit, but that's not always true. There are pelvic floor PTs out there who are very trauma-informed and wonderful. And you can always ask them, like, do you work with traumatized patients? So there are different things you can do about that. But yeah, that sounds to me, that particular case sounds like a little bit like maybe there's a scar tissue issue going on. Like there might be a uterine, there could be scar tissue around the urethra or something that is causing that, like if it requires physical pushing to get the urine out, then perhaps that is a little bit of an issue. But both of those practitioners can work on that for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Do you have anything that you want to promote that you're doing, or do you feel like you sufficiently mentioned everything?
I'm doing the endometriosis embodied course. This is specific to anyone who thinks they may have or has been diagnosed with endo. I do this specifically for endo people because I know that it's such a traumatizing experience to have endo and to not know how to get back to your body after perhaps surgery or, you know, during the experience of going through pain. So I teach some, like in this course, I'll be teaching some things from Chinese medicine point of view, how to use moxibustion on yourself, how to do self-massage, and which points you can activate for pain. And then we do a little bit more of the nervous system regulating exercises and embodiment exercises. So that's one thing that's starting in February. As far as immediately, I have... I'm doing a free webinar on medical trauma and actually how to, I'll be walking people in an hour through what you can do and a little bit of an embodiment exercise to do before you go to your doctor, kind of like we were talking about today. So that's free. And I'll probably be doing that again after December 3rd. And then what else? A lot of things. I'm constantly busy making and promoting and doing things because I really feel like this is something that we're lacking. You know, this kind of, I think these embodiment techniques should be well known to anyone with a vulva, a uterus, a vagina. I think it's really important to internalize some of these practices and make them, put them to good use every day of our lives because it really, it's like a statement to the world. You know, every person who starts to do these exercises or starts to really embody themselves sexually and reproductively, it brings, it's like a sense of activism in a way. And I love it. Yeah. I just love sharing these things with people. So,
yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much for the work that you do and for sharing time with us today. I hope you have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
And that was our interview with Maggie Flood. You can find her online at Sacral Spaces. I wanted to give two resources before we move along. The zine that I was discussing, was by Wasted Ink Zine Distro. You can find them on Instagram at Wasted Ink Zine Distro. Also, if you go to Early to Bed in the Andersonville community of Chicago, it's a wonderful feminist sex shop. They also have an online store as well. They have these wonderful cards by the door, and you can put your pronouns on them and any information that you want to give your physician for your first time visit. It's great. It keeps them informed and spares any awkward conversations or educating that you don't want to do.
And now, Burn Black presents the Burn Black Book Club. Say that 5 times fast.
Hello, I'm Kayla from Olympia, Washington. I'm an artist and aspiring educator. Today, I'm reviewing The Ethical Slut, 2nd edition, by Dossie Easton and Janet W. Hardy. I feel this is a self-help book for relationships with others and also with the self. I feel this is a beneficial read even if you aren't polyamorous. It talks about vulnerability leading to intimacy, boundary setting, dealing with a sex-negative culture and the impact it has on relationships, and the concept of a healthy breakup. It's also a good book for those who struggle with jealousy, insecurity, sexual shyness, owning your emotions, and what society deems as a normal relationship. The book has 4 parts. First, an introduction to the authors, then an explanation of what polyamory is, different relationship styles and the possibilities within them. Anyone could be polyamorous, and it's not always about sex, which I think often gets confused. The second part is about putting being an ethical slut into practice. Knowing your limits and needs, safe sex practices, and a section on flirting, which was helpful for me since I'm pretty introverted. Part 3 discusses dealing with jealousy and conflict, 2 things I have had difficulty navigating in relationships. They also talk about opening up an existing relationship. Part 4 talks about healthy breakups and the different changes that relationships go through. Sometimes people move away or decide to be more or less intimate. Sometimes you have to end a relationship due to a person's behavior, or if you've gone through a change that requires more of your focus. The rest of part 4 talks about what pleasure and sex actually are, a helpful reminder that it doesn't have to be what we were told it is. Additionally, part 4 suggests the idea of being intentionally single, a choice that I made for 4 years, during which I came to terms with my sexuality and eventually came out to my loved ones. As much emphasis as there is on being in relationships, there is a lot of value in being with yourself as well. The benefit of choosing to be single for an amount of time is that I was able to get to know myself and what I require in relationships. Now I can make choices based on how I want my life to be rather than out of lack, loneliness, or to distract myself. I wouldn't be who I am if I hadn't taken some time to really be alone. And after reading this book, I feel a little more confident in seeking what I want and need. I'd recommend this book to anyone, polyamorous or not, who wants a different perspective and approach to relationships, to someone thinking of opening up their relationship, or to someone who's newly single. I feel this book is helpful to those who just want to change their behaviors in relationships in general.
And now time for 5-minute diagnosis.
Hi everybody, my name's Sydney and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about endometriosis. So a quick recap, endometriosis is the mutation of endometrial tissue lining the uterine cavity wall. This mutation causes that tissue to grow in different places of the body, such as the lungs, the stomach, the liver, and the spinal cord, just to name a few. This is really what makes endometriosis so dangerous. And the mutation also means that tissue will continue to grow back even after it's been surgically removed. So for me, living with endometriosis means unpredictable hormone cycles, spotting and bleeding irregularly, as well as pain and nausea that has left me bedridden for days. It can feel like intense shooting pain in my pelvic region or even in my lower back or kidneys. Endo can also cause growths underneath scar tissue, which can triple the amount of pain women like me feel. And recent studies have even likened this pain to that of childbirth. So I'd like to take a minute to talk about the emotional pain that endometrial diseases can cause in families or in people without a silent illness in general. They tend not to believe your pain or your symptoms. And a lot of times I've been told to just like toughen up, to stop being dramatic, to deal with my pain very quietly. And this kind of dismissive reaction to my very real illness has led me down some really negative thought paths many times in my life. My own trauma with it is an experience with my mom, who would accuse me of faking my symptoms for attention, even though endometriosis runs in my family, and my own sister had been diagnosed before she died. So I want to explain a little bit about how I want people to act or how I wish they would have acted for me. And really that comes from a place of misunderstanding of my doctors, my medical professionals that I had trusted would dismiss me, you know, quite often. And I've heard so many stories of how doctors can be extremely dismissive of women who just try and seek help for painful periods in general. Many women have had their diagnosis pushed off for years because of lack of compassion or understanding in the medical field. I personally have been turned away by gynecologists, and my own primary care physician labeled me as drug seeking, because I was looking for a new kind of pain management regime after my own laparoscopic surgery. Other drugs that are used to deal with endometriosis, such as Lapron or common, birth control pills, are typically written off by insurance companies, and women have to pay the full prices for these drugs, whereas in the case of Lapron, men do not. I think this exposes a, very sexist mentality within the medical community, but I think it also speaks to the way we need to legitimize endometriosis as a woman's disease. But if I could go back to Lapron and its side effects for a moment, really I want to talk about how this drug, which is a prostate cancer drug, causes chemo brain, which can be really difficult to sort of fight through that fog, but also it's related to the loss of bone density, and women are still expected to work through this. As well as any other kind of major, pain or symptoms that they're dealing with because of their endometriosis. To wrap it up, I'd like to talk about the amazing resources that are out there for those of us living with endo, or just terrible pelvic pain in general. I personally love using PubMed.org. Which is a super geeky website that has all of the latest and non-biased medical studies on endo and many other health-related issues. Of course, I want to mention that Planned Parenthood has helped me greatly in my search for doctors and gynos and other related resources. And lastly, the social media community has brought me together with so many wonderful endometriosis ladies, and I cherish their support just every day. If I could leave you on one note, it'd be that if you're experiencing a rough cycle or any kind of pelvic pain, just try masturbating. It helps relax the uterine muscles. It sends doses of dopamine to the brain, and it can even be as effective for some women as taking an Advil. Thank you so much for taking the time with me today, and I hope you've learned something about endometriosis, or at least you've been able to relate to my experiences. Bea, thank you so much for having me, and enjoy the rest of your day.
She just doesn't want to leave the house. I'm telling you, whatever it is, there's a logical explanation. And the only reason you think there's a ghost or whatever is because it's Halloween right now. I mean, if it was Thanksgiving, you would think there was a turkey in here.
So, Valencia, that's why I reached out to you, because unlike her, you get that there were, like, other dimensions, you know?
Oh, yeah, honey, you don't have to sell me. I don't know if you know this, but ghosts are obsessed with me.
Really?
In high school, I was haunted by John Candy, like, constantly. I had to look up John Candy. I had no idea who he was.
And now for the self-care tip of the week.
Hi, BBs. It's Lauren. I am here to talk to you all about some really difficult things that people face during the holidays. One of them being grief and loss, and how to cope with the grief or loss of a loved one during the holiday season. If you listen to my podcast episode with Bea called Everybody Stage Dive Now, you would know that I lost my mom earlier this year. So this will be the first holiday season that I'm spending without her, which is especially hard because this was her most favorite time of year. So I wanted to share with you all some things that have helped me and will continue to help me through the next month to deal with her loss and honoring her memory. A few things that I found that really, really, really helped me is, first of all, keeping her memory alive by continuing her traditions. So doing the things that she loved to do this time of year, sharing those with the people that I'm close to, my partner, my child, continuing on with the traditions of our family. Another thing is just playing her favorite music, watching her favorite Christmas movies, eating her favorite foods, just anything that I can do to remember her in a really positive and happy way to distract from the really heavy feeling that I feel when I remember that she can't be here to experience it with me. So that is what I have found works for me. I hope that it works for you. If you try it and it doesn't, maybe you can find something else that does. Another thing that I wanted to talk to you all about that can be pretty difficult to deal with during the holidays is difficult familial relationships and knowing how to set boundaries with family members that don't necessarily respect you or make you feel certain ways that make you feel uncomfortable. I'm going to just provide you all with some tips about how to set boundaries and why boundaries are important. So everyone can relate to the fact that we all struggle with holding relationships with someone in our family. Whatever form that takes, everybody deals with problems with their family. We're all human. It's normal. But setting boundaries is especially important during the holidays because maybe you have a creepy uncle that hugs you for way longer than makes you feel uncomfortable, or maybe your family likes to bring up topics that are really sensitive to you and you don't feel comfortable discussing with them, or maybe you have dietary restrictions like veganism or a plant-based diet and your family likes to pressure you into eating things that you would not normally consume. So setting boundaries is absolutely essential to maintain those relationships, to keep them healthy, to make sure that your family is respecting you and your needs and your wants. If someone is very resistant to your setting boundaries, that just is further proof that that boundary is absolutely necessary for that relationship to maintain a healthy, normal balance. remember, setting boundaries is not to control other people. It is only to maintain your own well-being. Some tips for how to set boundaries is to be clear and direct with what you want. Tell them straight up. That's the only way to do it. Don't apologize for anything that you feel you need. You don't have to be sorry for your needs. That's absolutely essential to your being. Never apologize for that. Another tip is you can expect some resistance, but don't allow it to intimidate you. Setting boundaries and maintaining them is an ongoing process. So if you're going to set a boundary, you also have to maintain the responsibility that it's going to be an ongoing process to make sure that people continue to respect that boundary. And finally, again, be sure that you're setting it for yourself, for your well-being, and not to try to control your family, because what a wasted effort. No one can control the behavior of their family. So just remember, this holiday season, respecting other people's boundaries is just as important as maintaining and creating your own. And also, holidays are hard. Grief is normal. Process it in whatever way is easiest for you, and have a happy holidays.
So that's our episode for this week. I want to thank everybody who's emailed and everyone who contributed to making this audio zine happen, and all my Patreons. Thank you so much. I want to acknowledge that this week is Thanksgiving and a lot of us are going home to families or not spending time with families as it may be. And some of us don't have the distinct opportunity of even being ourselves around our families. So for all of us, I hope that this is one place that you can go to when you feel stressed out, when you feel like you don't belong, to just connect a little bit more. So I encourage all of you to connect with each other on the Instagram, make friends, talk about astrology, talk about mental health with one another, add each other. If you like a guest on this show, add them, talk to them. Everyone I bring upon this show has no ego, is willing to connect and wants to connect. So that's important, because this is a community, or as Rachel said on our previous episode, our family. We love Karuna Satori. Okay, so that's our episode. Happy holidays, you guys, and I love you all.
Burn Black.